essas coisas do mar, todo lado para isso. Mas o mar vem com ele. Dessas coisas que vai para a nossa, que vai para o espírito, and it began to make a rough off our speaker's part. In Mark, the 13th chapter, and the 63rd verse. Mark 14, 63. Now we were just reading there now. Back in 61, the high priest had asked him, he says, art thou the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? And Jesus said, I am. Just that simple. Do you expect the fellow to believe it? Then he adds, and ye shall see the Son of Man coming, and see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. And as we mentioned last week, that is a conditional sentence. What we call a conjunctive, a condition. Well, he put a question to him and says, I am. Then a high priest rent his clothes. Now, he wasn't much of a high priest. He was a good politician and all of that sort of thing. He wasn't much of a high priest. He didn't even know the law. So back in Leviticus, it was forbidden, absolutely forbidden, for a high priest to ever rent his clothes, like other people did in cases of distress, sorrow, and so forth. And especially in the temple, the high priest was not supposed to do that. Evidently, he didn't know that. And he says, I thought we need any further witnesses. Well, the fellow confessed. Of course, he's confessed. Of course, the high priest takes it that he has claimed to be something he isn't, or that he is not. That's why he's taking it to be. How do you suppose that deep down at this high priest knew the truth? And yet couldn't believe it? There are people like that. Satan's like that. Satan knows the truth. He knows the Bible. He can't believe it. And there are people like that. So here's a man in his bullheadedness, as we say, is going to fight right against the truth, right in the very teeth of it. Just like people do today. With every evidence and everything right against them and so on, they will maintain a lie. That's exactly what this man is doing. And Christendom is doing that in general today with the person and the work of the Lord Jesus Christ. They're denying practically everything refers to his deity. And then he goes on to say, you've heard his blasphemy, or the blasphemy. And of course that would be blasphemy, claiming to be God or Son of God or something like that, according to the Jewish belief, of that would be a blasphemy. And what think ye? And they all condemned him to be guilty of death, or liable to death. They all. Unanimous. The Lord didn't have a friend in that one, did he? And some began to spit on him, and to cover his face, and to buffet him, that is, box him with their hands, and to say unto him, prophesy. And the servants did strike him with the palms of their hands, right in the house, in the office of the high priest. That would change the story. And as Peter was beneath, in the palace, there cometh one of the maids of the high priest, and when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, and thou also wast with Jesus of Nazareth. But he denied, saying, I know not, neither understand I what thou sayest. And he went out in the porch and the cock crew. I just read here what the Lord said about the cock crew. Before it crowed twice, he was denying Christ. And a maid saw him again and began to say to them, who stood by, this is one of them. And he denied again. And a little after, they that stood by said again to Peter, surely thou art one of them, for thou art a Galilean, thy speech agreeth there too. But he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not this man of whom you speak. And the second time, the cock crew. And then Peter came to all at once. I guess that woke him up. That's what the cock crowing in the morning is for, isn't it? the way people are. Well, anyhow, Peter woke up. And Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said unto him, "For the cock crow thrice, I shall deny you thrice." And when he thought so on, he wept. Oh, what we can do sometimes in time of stress, trying to defend ourselves and so on, our reason just runs far away. And so it did there with Peter. He had just a few hours before had said that he would never deny him and so on. And yet here he does that very thing he said he wouldn't do. And you know, quite often that is true of mankind. A man will make a very strong statement that he would not do such and such. And it seems that's the very thing he does. I wonder why. That little psychological quirk there is there. But it's true. And sometimes they say they won't do something and then just turn right around and do it almost immediately. That's one of the puzzles. Well, there are quite a few little quirks that need some explanation like that. In a meeting one night, many years ago, a man who was putting on a show of hypnotism asked a certain young man in the audience, he says, "Come and follow me." He was wanting to get somebody on the stage to act, and the young man says firmly, "No." And yet, before the fellow got to the stage, he was up and followed him. He said no, and yet he followed him. And he was under that same fellow's power for about 3 days, 3 nights. Did some of the silliest, craziest things the fellow made to do until the town rose up against him. And I could tell you over and over many times that I just know her like that. Somebody says he doesn't want to do something, and that's the very thing he does. And so there was Peter. The Lord knew he'd do it. Told him he would do it. Yep, Peter did it. Well, we just so much can't understand that, can we? Until we've lived a few years, I've seen it, and maybe experienced it ourselves, and we begin to see maybe just what happened. And straightway, that is, right away now, in the morning, the chief priests held consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and bound Jesus, betrayed him away, and delivered him to Pilate, to the Roman governor. Now, so far as we know, this is the first that Pilate and any of the soldiers and so on knew what was going on. As we said before in our lessons here, there were no soldiers, no Roman soldiers out in Gethsemane. That was the temple guard, with Judas leading it, and some other rabble picked up along the way, clubs and weapons and so forth. As one time, of Judas got to be able to do, and Goliath. Well, what people will do, and won't do, to just have, be a leader, have a little glory for a moment at least. And Pilate asked him, "Art thou the king of the Jews?" Almost the same thing the high priest asked him. And he answered, said unto him, "Thou sayest it. You're right." And the chief priest accused him of many things, but he answered nothing. And Pilate asked him again, saying, "Answerest thou nothing? Behold, how many things they witness against thee." But Jesus yet answered nothing. So that Pilate marveled. He wasn't like Peter, was he? I wonder if Peter had been there before Pilate and he had quizzed him like that, what Peter had done. Or you or me, to put it that way. Now at that feast, he released unto them one prisoner, whomsoever they desired. That was his habit, each year at that feast, to do the Jews a little favor. He would deliver to them a prisoner if they desired. Of course, it would be a Jew. Some Jew had been imprisoned for some misdemeanor or other, probably accused of sedition against the Roman government. And there was one named Barabbas, a son of Abbas, Barabbas' son, which they bound, which lay bound, with them that had made insurrection with him, who had committed murder in the insurrection. And, of course, there were insurrections by the Jews all the time. The Romans were in power. They had trouble with them all the time. We call them guerrillas today. Oh, I mean guerrillas. Yeah, maybe that's better. Today, and terrorists, so forth. Well, they've always had these books. That's nothing new. And so the multitude, crying aloud, began to desire him to do as he had done, ever done unto them. But Pilate answered them, saying, "Will you that I release unto you the King of the Jews?" He thought, sure, he'd get this thing off of his hands now. He could get rid of this problem. But by being a Jew, they would want him released. But it didn't work out this time. Pilate just doesn't seem to have any luck to getting out of this problem. For he knew that the chief priests had delivered him for envy. Notice that. They delivered him because of envy, or account of it. But the chief priests moved the people. They got out and began to do a little working among the people to get them moved against the Lord, that he should rather release Barabbas unto them, that they should choose a murderer rather than their king. And Pilate answered and said again unto them, "What will you then that I shall do unto you, unto him whom ye call the King of the Jews?" And they cried out again, "Crucify him." Then Pilate said unto them, "Why? How evil hath he done?" And they cried out the more exceedingly, "Crucify him." They had no reason. And mobs never do have a reason, do they? I never knew of it. And so Pilate, willing to content the people, released Barabbas unto them, and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him, to be crucified. Well, that was done rather easily and slickly, wasn't it? The Jewish leaders got their own way pretty quickly. And the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium, and they called together the whole band. Now their own soldiers are going to have their fun. And they clothed him with purple and plaited a crown of thorns and put it about his head and began to salute him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" How they hated the Jews anyhow. And they smote him on the head with a reed and did spit upon him, and bowing their knees worshipped him. Mock worship. And when they mocked him, they took off the purple from him and put his own clothes on him and led him out to crucify him. Now remember here that just a few hours earlier, he almost died in the garden of the load that was on him. And he takes all of this treatment from the Jews and then from the Roman soldiers, and they lead him out to crucify him. And he's getting pretty weak by that point. And they compel one Simon the Cyrenian who passed by, coming out of the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross. And they bring him unto the place called Golgotha, which is being interpreted the place of a skull. So the hill that looked like a skull. A couple of dark places in the side of his eyes and a nose protruding in the mouth. Maybe you've seen some photographs of it sometime. Of course, it doesn't look now like it did back then. Quite like they'd been years and years of erosion and so on, but still there's some whiteness. And they gave him to drink wine mingled with myrrh. But he received it not. That would have taken away his reason. He wouldn't have suffered much then. And when they crucified him, they parted, that is, divided his garments, casting lots upon them, what every man should take. Now that was what the soldiers were to get as part of their pay for part of their job, as they get the clothes of the victim. Now it doesn't tell you here all about that. In another one, they cast lots for all of his garments excepting one. Or I mean, they divided among themselves all his garments except one, and they cast lots for it. That was his expensive robe, linen robe that he had. I wonder who gave that to him. Some of the family at Bethany? Very likely. Because it speaks about Lazarus also being in a linen cloak. And it was the third hour, and they crucified him. I believe it says the ninth hour in John's Gospel. I wonder why. Yeah, the Jewish method of reckoning would have been the third hour from sunrise. That'd be 9 o'clock. And the Roman reckoning, well, it was from midnight, like we do. It was 9 o'clock. So if you know what how these are writing, remember that John is writing to Gentiles his gospel. So he uses Gentile time and many other Gentile words, expressions. So there's no contradiction here, whatever. It's just a matter of who is being written to and what the wording is. And with him. Yeah, choice. And the superscription of his accusation was written over the King of the Jews. Now there's some questions sometimes about the various titles that are written and put up there and so on. But I doubt that there was much change made because Pilate wrote the first accusation as far as we know. And when they wanted him to change it, he says, what I've written, I've written. He's not going to make any change. That's one thing he wasn't going to do. Remember, Pilate did not do this willingly. Hadn't been for his politics, he'd have gotten out of it some way. But he had to please the people. That is, to keep his job and so on. And so here at this time then, they crucify with him two thieves. Not malefactors, but thieves. One on the right hand, the other on his left. Now this is after that his garments have been parted, you notice. Well, there were two malefactors laid out with him and crucified on either side of him. And that'd be long before the parting of the garments. But here, after the garments are parted and so on, and there are two thieves. These are highwaymen, not just evildoers. And the scripture is fulfilled, which saith, and he was numbered with the transgressors. Now, pretty bad company out there, wasn't it? For the King of the Jews to be with. Manufacturers, thieves, highwaymen, murderers. And they that passed by railed on him, made fun of him, wagging their heads and saying, Ah, thou that destroyest a temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself and come down from the cross. Remember, that was one of the accusations put against him. He said a statement like that. Of course, they didn't know what he was talking about. Likewise also the chief priests, mocking, said among themselves with the scribes, He saved others, himself he cannot save. Let Christ, the King of Israel, descend now from the cross, that we may see and believe. They wouldn't have believed. They were determined not to believe. In fact, if he'd have got down from the cross, they'd have caught him and put him right back up again. And I don't know, he might be in the same danger if he came to the world called Christendom today. And they that were crucified with him, that is these last two, reviled him. But remember, one of the first two that brought out, one of them did not revile him, the other one did. There's every indication that this one who did not revile had known and heard of him before. And now meets him out here and is convinced that he is the King of the Jews and asks him to have, that he might have a part in his kingdom. And when the sixth hour came, that'd be noon, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour, which would be 3 p.m. So from noon to 3 p.m, there was darkness over the whole land, not just in Jerusalem. Now, in the first place, this could not be an eclipse of the sun because it only lasts actually a few seconds, a full eclipse. And astronomers can find no full eclipse in Palestine at that time. So that wasn't it. Well, now, suppose we just say it in a figurative way. God just put his hand over the sun and shut out the light from the sun. Suppose we just put it that way. That's what it amounts to. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried in a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which is being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Turn back with me to Psalm 22. Psalm 22. I think that most good Bible students in studying this and so on have come to the conclusion, and I think possibly they're right, that the Lord recited this whole Psalm 22, but only the first line and the last are recorded in Mark's Gospel or in any of them. Let's just read that through and just think of the Lord repeating this on the cross, and that David had foretold this. Remember that Psalms 22, 23, and 24 are a series concerning the shepherd of Israel. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from helping me and from the words of my roaring? O my God, I cry in the daytime, but thou hearest not. And in the night seasons, and I'm not silent. But thou art holy. Thou that habitest praises of Israel, our fathers trusted in thee. They trusted, and thou didst deliver them. They cried unto thee, and were delivered. They trusted in thee, were not confounded. For I am a worm, and no man. They reproach a man, and despised are the people. Capitalized, Israel. All they that see me laugh me to scorn. They shoot out the lip. They shake their head, saying, he trusted on the Lord if he would deliver him. Let him deliver him, seeing he delighteth in you. The very words that they were saying, David, centuries before, had written, But thou he that took me out of the womb, thou didst make me hope when I was upon my mother's breast. I was cast upon thee from the womb. Thou art my God from my mother's belly. Be not far from me, for trouble is near, for there is none to help. Many bulls have compassed me, strong bulls of Bashan have beset me around. They gape upon me with their mouths, as a ravening and a roaring lion. I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted in the midst of my bowels. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue cleaveth to my jaws. And thou hast brought me into the dust of death. For dogs have compassed me. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. I may tell all my bones. They look and stare upon me. They part my garments among them and cast lots upon my vesture. But be not far from me, O Lord, O my strength. Haste thou to help me. Deliver my soul from the sword, my darling from the power of the dog. Save me from the lion's mouth, for thou hast heard me from the horns of the unicorns. I will declare thy name unto my brethren. In the midst of the congregation will I praise thee. Ye that fear the Lord, praise him. All ye seed of Jacob, glorify him. And fear him, all ye the seed of Israel. For he hath not despised nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted. Neither hath he hid his face from him. But when he cried unto him, he heard. My praise shall be thee in the great congregation. I will pay my vows before them that fear him. The meek shall eat and be satisfied. They shall praise the Lord and seek him. Your heart shall live forever. All the ends of the world shall remember and turn unto the Lord. All the kindreds of nations shall worship before thee. For the kingdom is the Lord's, and he is a governor among the nations. All they that be fat upon the earth shall eat and worship. All they that go down to dust shall bow before him, and none can keep alive his own soul. A seed shall serve him. It shall be accounted to the Lord for a generation. They shall come and shall declare his righteousness unto the people that should have born. That he hath done this, it is finished. Now I could have stopped in that and explained several verses in there. You caught quite a bit of us. We went and we don't have time to do that now. 31 verses there. And you'll notice you have a companion Bible that many of these verses are quoted in the New Testament. Of course, the first one was. We just read that in Mark. And down verse 3, that is quoted in the New Testament. Verse 18 and verse 22, those are quoted in the records of the death of the Lord. Well, I just wanted to take that up, that place there. Now let's see here. Verse 35, am I? Yeah. And some of them stood by when they heard it said, behold, he calleth Elias. Well, Eloi, Eloi, sound almost like Elias, you see. And one ran and filled a sponge full of vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him the drink, saying, let alone, let us see whether Elias will come to take him down. And Jesus cried with a loud voice, gave up the ghost, which is a Hebrew idiom of die, gave up the breath. And the veil of the temple was rent in twain in two pieces from the top to the bottom. Now somebody didn't get a hold of the bottom of it until it was tearing too, and they couldn't anyhow. Because that was made out of very strong material, and from what records we can find and information so on, it must have been close to a foot thick. There was a saying among the rabbins of that time that a team of oxen pitched on either side could not tear that curtain like that. And besides, that had to torn it from the bottom to the top. But it was torn from the top to the bottom, and that was no human agency. Of course, God with his two hands can tear it apart easily, couldn't he? All right. And when the centurion, which stood over against him, saw that, he so cried out and gave up the ghost. He said, truly, this man was the Son of God, or a Son of God. And he is a supernatural being, because he didn't know about God. But there is a testimony, at least. This man was not an ordinary man. He was far above the ordinary. There were also women looking on afar off, among whom was Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James, Elias, and of Joseph, and Salome. Now, there were four women. We find them in other places mentioned. In John's Gospel. Now, let's just turn to that in John's Gospel. I don't just remember exactly the first chapter and verse, but I think I can turn right to it. I think it's about the 19th chapter. Yes, 1925. Want you to notice something here. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister. Doesn't name her. Now his mother's sister, do you know her name? Salome. The mother of James and John. John here is not mentioning his mother's name, see? Just as in his gospel, he doesn't mention his own name. So here it is. His mother, that is, the Lord's mother, and his mother's sister, Salome, Mary, the wife of Cleopas, and Mary Magdalene. Three Marys and Salome. And Mark leaves out Salome. Don't know why. Now, there's a parenthesis in verse 41, speaking of these women, who also, when he was in Galilee, followed him and ministered unto him. And many other women, also here besides these four, which came up with him unto Jerusalem. Remember that in his ministry, he had healed a number of them, or their children, or something. And so they were very thankful for that. Loyal to him until the end. Even when some of the men ran away and fled and so on, the women stayed behind. Of course, they weren't much danger from the Roman soldiers as long as they behaved themselves. All right, now when the even was come, I'd be about getting toward 6 o'clock. Because it was a preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath. Now, do you see how people get the idea that this was on a Friday, the day before the Sabbath? Not knowing the Jewish law and the Jewish feasts and so on. Not realizing, if they read this very carefully, you can see that isn't true here. The Sabbath, the high Sabbath, was the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And in this particular year, That feast of unleavened bread came on Thursday. And so before Thursday began, which would be on our Wednesday evening, they were in a hurry to get him put away and have everything all cleaned up. Try to wear pants and so on so they could observe this great high Sabbath. Now this was the highest Sabbath, the greatest Sabbath in the Jewish year. There could be less activity and so on that day. Any work or anything would be done and so on that day. It was really strictly the high Sabbath. And so this 14th of Nisan, which included the Passover, beginning on Tuesday night, on the 14th, and the Lord and his disciples observed the Passover that Tuesday night. And then he was taken prisoner that night, and on Wednesday morning, or our Wednesday morning, crucified about 9 o'clock, darkness from 12 to 3, and after that he died. And so now here, it's getting near to toward evening, Joseph of Arimathea, an honorable counselor, which also waited for the kingdom of God, came and went in boldly unto Pilate, and craved or asked for the body of Jesus. Here's one of his believers that comes right out of the open now. The opposite of Peter. No doubt a member of the Sanhedrin. And Pilate marveled if he were already dead. And calling unto him the centurion, he asked him whether he had been any while dead. And when he knew it of the centurion, he gave the body to Joseph. And he, that is Joseph, brought fine linen, and took him down and wrapped him in the linen, and laid him in a sepulcher, which was hewn out of a rock, and rolled a stone under the door of the sepulcher. Shut it up. When that stone was rolled there, there wasn't any ordinary person could roll it away. It was too heavy to take, or three maybe. And Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of Joseph, not his own mother. They held very late. That means that they looked very intently and saw him to know just exactly where it was. They had something in their mind. So this happened just before sundown on Wednesday evening. Now if you figure that, it was in the tomb Wednesday night, Thursday night, and Friday night. That's three nights. He was in the tomb Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and raised from the dead just before the Sabbath was finished, before the first day of the week started, Saturday evening, just before sunset. He was raised from the dead. In other words, that tomb was empty. Well, now, some soldiers from the temple, not Roman soldiers, come out there just about that time and stood guard. So that nobody could go from the tomb and Lord be taken out or anything. And all the time that tomb was empty. And it was a joke on those fellows. They guarded almost all night there an empty tomb. And long toward the morning, and they didn't go to sleep. They were hired to say they'd gone to sleep, but they didn't. They saw angels come and roll away that stone. And the tomb was empty. They didn't see anybody come out either. Well, he's already out. The stone was rolled away so that his people, his believers, could see that he was gone. Now, he didn't come out like Lazarus did. Lazarus came out with all of his kind of grave wrappings on him and everything. A heavy affair because they always wrapped him in a lot of spices and stuff like that, which when they set were almost like plaster Paris. And how Lazarus was ever able to get out of that tomb, I don't know. But he did. He come hopping out or floating out or something. And they were told to loose him. But then they tell the tomb of the Lord is... People went into it. It was opened here when the soldiers saw it, and they fled back to the high priest. It was opened then. When Peter and John looked in there, why, there were the clothes that he'd been in laying just like they were. He'd just slipped out of them without ever having to break a seam or make a hole anywhere, anything of the kind. There it was, perfectly formed with his body. And even the fossils on his head was right there in place. He had slipped out. Now, I asked you another question. When he appeared unto his disciples, shortly after that, he was clothed. Where did he get his new suit clothes? The soldiers had gotten his own clothes. He'd been wrapped in this linen, which was stuck on him with the stuff and so on, left in the tomb. So where did he get his clothes? People never stop and ask questions like that, do they? Well, of course, I was born with a question mark. I guess it I've always asked more questions than I should. But you know, I encourage that. I think that is one good thing in your study. Ask every question you possibly can about a passage. Look at it from every angle. You may find truth hidden there that you didn't realize. And doing that, you can learn. In fact, that's the only way to learn. People are not inquisitive, never learn very much. But I digressed a little bit there. We have a little bit of time yet. We'll start on verse chapter 16. And when the Sabbath was passed, now that is this Sabbath on a Thursday, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome, now Salome was mentioned here, but Mary, the Lord's mother, is not mentioned. The others are the two Marys and Salome, had bought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. Now they didn't buy those spices on the high Sabbath, because they couldn't. There would have been no buying or selling, whatever. Now, the word had bought is just simply bought. So, probably on their way out, they stopped at the shop, got these things. And very early in the morning, the first of the week, a day is put in your italics, it's not there, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre? And when they looked, they saw the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. Now, this is not Sunday morning. Or was it? Now, if he was raised from the dead just before sundown on Saturday night, and the guard was there Saturday night, and toward the morning of the next day, that is toward the morning, because the day wouldn't begin until sunrise for the Jews, and that's what Mark is writing about. The tomb was emptied, and he left. That is, he left the tomb, and it was the stone taken away. It was only just a little time after that that they came and brought these spices. Now, that would be at the end. It had been more than 3 days and three nights. Now, I don't know why they brought these things, and they knew to the stone put up there and so on, or they knew very well they can roll away. And then they began to realize, and they said among themselves, well, who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre? And when they looked in, they saw that the stone was rolled away. It was very great. Looked, when they looked. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment. And they were scared, affrighted. And he saith unto them, be not affrighted. Ye see Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen. Those three words. He is risen. That is the great message we have today. He is not here. Behold the place where the lady. I wonder who this young man was. The undertaker's assistant? Well, he knows a lot of things anyway. But go your way. Tell his disciples and Peter. And he goes before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him, as he said unto you. There's the place to see him. You're seeking him here at the temple, his tomb. You're seeking him among the dead. You're seeking him among the living. That's another message we have. And they went out quickly. It's a little scary. This young man was an angel. And they begin to realize it. And they fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed. Neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. Now, when Jesus was risen early the first day of the week, now, we got a word early here. And of course it means in your note here, any time after sunset, and it was along toward morning, no doubt. He appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven devils. She was a bad woman. And she went and told them that had been with him as they mourned and wept. And they, when they had heard that he was alive and had been seen of her, believed not. After that, he appeared in another form unto two of them as they walked and went into the country on the way to Emmaus. And they went and told it unto the residue, neither believed they them. After it, he appeared unto the leaven as they sat at meat and upbraided them with their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they believed not them which had seen him after he was risen. And he said unto them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And he that believeth is baptized, and is baptized shall be saved, and he that believeth not shall be damned, or judged. And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils, they shall speak with new tongues, they shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. They shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover. I'm going through this quickly because our time is just about up. But you can see here that there's something wrong today. It either isn't this dispensation that's written out here, or everything that they're doing today is failed. Because after they baptize a person today, these things don't happen. And not only that, but look at they have to believe and be baptized. And that doesn't seem to be the order of some folks today either. Well, verses 19 and 20. So then, after the Lord had spoken unto them, he was received up into heaven and sat on the right hand of God. Now he goes over this very quickly, and Mark does. It was 40 days after the Lord appeared to his disciples that he was received up into heaven. And it speaks of us in Acts, the first chapter. He taught them 40 days concerning the kingdom. Of course, people don't believe that. They think he taught them concerning the church. And they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word with signs following. In other words, this is a testimony that these apostles went out and finished that job that they were to do. It isn't for somebody else to do, it was for them to do. And it's not been passed on down to people today, as some people will claim. They finished it, the signs followed, and that was that. And those signs have not followed since they finished their ministry. All right, just put there.